Thank you. I'm Scott Sagan, and what we thought we would do is to engage in a conversation about the global nuclear future. I want first to welcome all of you on behalf of both the American Academy of Arts and Sciences and the Chicago Council, and I'm very much looking forward to comments and questions during the Q&A period. A variety of factors, the cost, volatility of oil markets, concern about global warming, concern about energy security, have all led to a resurgence of interest around the world in the potential uses of nuclear power for energy. Will the spread and expansion of the use of nuclear energy lead to inadvertent security concerns regarding nuclear terrorism or the spread of nuclear weapons? The initiative has been studying this with a global effort and an interdisciplinary effort, as you see, by having political scientists and physicists working together and having many engineers and other social scientists from around the globe working on this issue, producing the two volumes of Daedalus that you have in the back. I have a very clear and simple answer to the question, will the growth, the so-called renaissance of nuclear power, lead to increased security risks? My simple answer is, it depends. It depends on who gets nuclear power, depends on the kinds of reactors and the kinds of safety and security systems attached to them. It depends on the global political architecture or the set of institutions that are built around the growth and spread of nuclear power. So let me start, before turning it over to Bob and then Steve, by giving you a sense of the challenge that lies ahead. There are today some 30 states that operate nuclear power reactors. There are some 50 states, however, who have asked the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, for assistance in helping design a potential nuclear power program for them. Those states are the aspirants. The other states are the existing nuclear power states. There are only 9 states that have nuclear weapons, but many more could potentially develop nuclear weapons. And the growth of nuclear power will create both some technical capabilities and some knowledge, nuclear knowledge, in a number of new states. So the first issue that we addressed when trying to think about how to get a handle on the potential spread of nuclear power and its implications for security is to look at who are the countries that are asking the IAEA for assistance. Who are the aspirants? And if you look at them, and we have the full list, and compare that to the existing states, you see that there is a fundamental difference in a number of political categories, political characteristics, that differentiate the aspirant states from the existing states. Some of the growth of nuclear power will be an expansion of nuclear power in the states that have it already. Some of it is likely to occur in new states that acquire nuclear power for the first time in the future. If you look at political characteristics or social characteristics, I thought I'd share with you just some of the differences. You look at the World Bank's Corruption Index, which is a measure the World Bank uses for financial purposes to understand the corruption levels of a country, and existing states compared to the aspirant states of nuclear power, the aspirant states are on average 22% lower in terms of their ability to control corruption. In terms of their strategic stability, as a domestic stability, the likelihood of domestic insurgencies or other political violence that could occur, according to the World Bank, aspirant states are 20% higher in terms of the risk of instability. In terms of regulatory quality, aspirant states are 22% below, on average, the existing states. And in terms of democracy indices, which are done through what is in political science called the Polity 4 data set, which is a set of various factors that collectively define a state's democratic quality, the new aspirant states are 40% lower collectively than are the existing states. And that's important when you think about stability. It's also important when you think about cheating on the non-proliferation treaty, because the non-proliferation treaty, in which the non-nuclear weapon states have agreed that they will, in exchange for help with getting nuclear power, agree not to acquire nuclear weapons, the number of cases that we know of countries who were cheating and were caught and were exposed and reversed, every single one of them were non-democracies. There's something about the transparency or something about democratic rule that has encouraged the members who joined that treaty, who are democracies, to be more loyal to their commitments than were some of the non-democracies. So that is a sense of the landscape that we have in front of us. Many countries interested in developing nuclear power, not all will, but we are facing major issues in terms of the kinds of states and the institutions that they are members of that will govern the kind of nuclear future that we have. We will also be influenced by the technologies that will help determine what states get nuclear power and how fast and how rapid the spread of nuclear power is, and by the political institutions that we have created, sometimes nurtured, and sometimes hit over the head with hammers and have not nurtured some of the political institutions that govern this. Let me first turn to the technologies, to my colleague Bob Rosner.